3, 10.04 a.m. on the central coast of California. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed on Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today we're taking your calls, comments, and questions regarding technology, your computer, your dilemmas, your life with regards to technology. You can call in. Phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. In about 10 minutes we'll be taking your calls. You can also go to geekspeak.org, click on the geeks, and then send a message. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks Sean Cleveland, Senior Technical Marketing Manager of Transmeta, and a student of American Literature, Miles Elam. Welcome, geeks, to Geek Speak.
Morning.
Good morning.
We're going to be covering people's calls with comments and questions about technology. Anybody's listening, you're welcome to call in. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877. And online, geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, and then send a message. Before we do that, though, we're going to do the news. Miles, what do you got for us today?
Well, so far, the Attorney General has declared a first in California for an anti-spam ruling. It's a $2 million fine on a company accused of sending unsolicited bulk email.
Yay!
And Attorney General Bill Lockyer warned that the decision foreshadowed a crackdown on spam. I've yet to see whether or not it will go any further, and who knows how it will affect with regards to the federal law. As far as individual private consumers, the California law allows private individuals to sue for up to $1,000 in damages for spam.
And how do you define damages with spam?
If it disrupts your work, according to this California law, you're not supposed to send unsolicited mail anymore.
Okay.
So.
Well, cool. So we'll see some action in this realm. Thank you, Miles, for that. Sean Cleveland, what do you got for us first today?
Well, like the trend in the economy, the stories lately that spending is up 7.2%, it looks like there are some good trends in the computer world, too. Server shipments surged last quarter. They jumped 21% to 1.37 million in the third quarter compared with 2002. Preliminary information from Gartner, which is a market research firm that collects this information, said that unit shipments increased more than 10% compared to the year earlier, which is pretty big. However, they note that these are primarily low price systems and that revenue
low
growth.
Low price servers?
Yes, well, systems, servers.
Okay.
Overall, these systems aren't as expensive as, you know, the big iron of yesterday. So that revenue growth was going to more likely be limited. But the big names in the server world right now, HP is still on top. They sold 408,000 units. And HP increased 21% from last year. That was big for them. IBM grew even faster, 37% to 220,000. And Sun, which you would think would sell a lot, actually admitted that they probably should have sold Intel-based systems after all.
Interesting.
And
well,
they didn't grow as fast.
It makes sense that if the focus has been on the less expensive servers, Sun's not in that category, really. Thank you, Sean, for the update on that. Miles?
Speaking of business news, the ban on Internet sales tax ends tomorrow. 1998, there was a moratorium put on levying taxes on internet sales, on transactions over the internet by Congress, and it has not been renewed. So far, the House of Representatives have passed a bill that would extend the ban and make it permanent, but the legislation hasn't been voted on in the Senate yet.
So November 1st, tomorrow, companies are supposed to charge taxes for internet sales?
States can
collect
sales tax.
And how does it work? The business that wherever the business is located, that state is responsible for the sales tax?
I cannot answer that question.
All right, that's fair enough. Now, Sean, I cut you off a bit on more trends with the market being positive. What's the other trend?
Broadband is increasing in demand. It seems it doesn't matter whether it's cable or DSL. The war rages on, but demand has been increasing steadily.
So more people are getting connected?
Yes.
Which means more people are spending money on their connections.
But it's unclear whether aggressive price cuts by DSL providers are eating into cable market share.
So they might just be fighting each other rather than...
Yeah, but everybody's showing growth. Comcast, Time Warner Cable, SBC, who is our local DSL provider here in Santa Cruz area, said they continue to be, you know, very big. They've added 365,000 subscribers.
SBC is one of the options for DSL in the area.
I said the biggest.
Okay, biggest, fair enough.
They're showing a 60% increase from last year. And Verizon is going. They're also increasing as well.
So everybody's going up. So it's just like the servers. We're looking at kind of a rebound, it looks like, from a technical perspective.
It's understandable. I mean, I don't think I could go back to a modem.
Fair enough. Miles.
Well, along those lines, when he was talking about broadband, also in the wireless community, broadband is taking hold, or at least a high-speed spec, this what's being called ultra-wideband.
However, we've talked about that on the show before. Mm-hmm.
However, there's a big push between industry heavyweights that they don't want it to have heavy, burdensome licensing restrictions on them. In other words, they want it to be an open spec. So the spec, which would later be called 802.15.3a, for all of those who care, people are looking for it to be an open spec so that anyone can take part in it in what is expected to be a $1.39 billion industry by 2007.
All right, this is GeekSpeak. What's the speed?
What they're talking about is 100 megabits per second.
Good.
Yeah,
so
between devices,
but equivalent to Ethernet cabling.
Yes, but this is over short distances. This is talking about the same application space we use for Bluetooth and the like.
Oh, really?
Things that are
just
in
talking
a
feet.
Right, talking about a very close link.
Meters, actually.
Why? I don't understand why you would. I guess it's got to start somewhere.
Fair enough. Sean, you got anything else you're not so negative on? Oh, I'm sorry.
You mean other than external hard drives being erased by the new Mac OS upgrade?
Oh, please do tell.
It seems a glitch in Panther, which is the name of Mac OS, the latest version of their upgrade, is erasing external FireWire hard drives that have a bridge chipset from Oxford, the Oxford 922 bridge chipset. It looks like the biggest manufacturer of these FireWire external drives with this chip is LaCie. So their recommendation is disconnect your FireWire external drives.
While installing?
While installing the upgrade.
And then when you're done installing, it's okay?
It's okay.
Safe? Okay. Yeah. Good to know. So if you're going to Panther, which is OS 10.3, make sure to disconnect all FireWire drives you're upgrading. I'm sure Apple will probably release that with their...
And for those of you that don't know, Panther adds 150 new features, including improvements on its Finder and mail programs, among other enhancements.
And we'll be doing a show later on about Panther. And if you're in the Santa Cruz area, you can learn all about Panther at the next Mac Users Forum group. You can learn more about that at maccruisers.org. Or is it .net? Give it a shot. Mac Cruisers with one C in between the Mac and the Cruisers. Learn all about it. There's going to be a test drive at the next meeting. Miles, regarding drives getting terminated by software installs.
I was just about to bring that one up.
I thought you might.
The install for Mandrake Linux 9.2 has been found that some CD-ROM drives were locking up or being turned into useless paperweights. And what has been found is that it isn't the Linux install program that's causing the problem. It's a defective CD-ROM drive. The LG CD-ROM drives, which come with some Dell computers, Compaq, IBM, Aptivas. Now, bear in mind, when I say CD-ROM drive, I mean just a CD-ROM drive, not a CDRW, CDR, or DVD-RW, or DVD drive. What they do, there's a command called flush cache. And this is part of the ATAPI spec, which the spec that most CD-ROM drives and consumer-grade hard drives use these days. And what flush cache does is say, okay, we're done writing, stop, you know, clear this out. However, for CD-ROM drives, which are read-only, it doesn't really have a meaning. And according to the spec, your manufacturers are supposed to either not support it, return an error code if you try to use it, you know, or the like. However, what LG has done is made that command actually do something. In this case, overwrite the firmware to the drive. And this is what happens when the installation program looks to see what the drive is, calls that command.
And the drive is now a paperweight.
And the drive becomes useless.
Yikes, that's not good.
So now, is there a fix for this?
I don't know whether or not firmware can be updated on that or not.
Typically, firmware can be, but that may not solve the actual problem, because you could update the firmware and then the same thing can happen again.
Well, the firmware is what decides which commands are being executed. So the firmware would solve the problem.
So if you have this drive, you might want to check it out.
However,
so again, this would be a situation where make sure not to have your CD-ROM installed, which is normally internal, would be kind of a drag, and it's normally what you're installing the operating system with.
Right. Now, so far, installing most things doesn't cause a problem. However, having found out about this dilemma, it leaves open the door for script kiddies or someone trying to crack a system, sending out a worm that will look for this particular CD-ROM drive, which is not an uncommon type. However, most people have CDRWs these days, so they're not going to be hit. But if you have just a standard CD-ROM drive, you may be at risk.
Good to know. Thank you very much, Miles. Now, I just mentioned Mac Cruisers, and the URL is macruzer.com. And they are a nonprofit community organization dedicated to the promotion of all things Macintosh. More information about a group can be found, their group can be found at maccruiser.com, 1C in between. The next meeting is November 5th, and they're going to be talking about Panther. Diana Ademic and Steve Salica will point out and step through many of the hot new advances in Panther, the latest version of Mac OS X. You've seen hints of what Panther can do. Now experience the real thing as demonstrated by the experts, and you can learn more about that at maccruiser.com, especially if you are in the Santa Cruz area. Sean, what news do you have for us, sir?
Yeah, this is a big, meaty piece of news here. The Microsoft Xbox is getting a karaoke add-on.
My dreams have been answered. So
that's right. I'm out of here.
So it's a Microsoft release?
I guess it's called Music Mixer.
Okay.
It consists of a microphone, software, enables an Xbox to become a karaoke machine.
Does it come with voice lessons?
So I guess it retails for like $40.
Okay, so are you going to buy it? You get an Xbox?
I have an Xbox.
So you're going to buy the $4 add-on and have a karaoke machine?
You don't want to hear me sing. But I guess it comes with a photo application so that you can transfer images from your PC to your Xbox to create orchestrated slideshows. Something else interesting here, it says the Xbox is, you know, it's already being used as a digital jukebox in a lot of ways, and you can rip CD tracks to the machine's hard drive, which I didn't know. Obviously, I'm not utilizing my Xbox to its fullest potential.
Get on that, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's kind of a cool feature.
Microsoft, the holidays are coming, and small kids love karaoke.
And they're not in time to release Xbox 2.
Parents don't, you know.
You know, when they first released the Xbox, we had an author on that wrote a book about Inside the Xbox. Author's name is?
Dean Takahashi.
Dean Takahashi.
He's the senior tech reporter for the San Jose Mercury News.
Now, Dean, in his book, mentions that Microsoft was losing a lot of money on the Xbox.
Yeah, the book is Inside the Xbox.
Yeah, but to get in the market of the game console, Microsoft just threw tons of money at it and keeps throwing money at it.
Yes.
To get into this niche that's a huge industry. So the Xbox is definitely there now, and it looks like they're moving that niche and spreading it out to the multimedia in the home features of
and now
music
the
burning.
Nintendo GameCube is gone.
Really?
Yeah. it's been they've stopped manufacturing those.
So Nintendo's down.
But they're down. Yeah. They're out. So now it's between Microsoft and Sony.
So is the Xbox pulling into the black now because the PS2 had such a big head start on it?
Oh, they still do. But Xbox is doing better from what I understand. I know they're moving forward with
again,
Xbox, too.
It doesn't matter if they make profit on it for 10 years. I mean, Microsoft can do that. They've got enough money, theoretically.
Yeah.
Miles, hi.
Yes. Well, just to prove that computers aren't everything, let's hit something from the biological front. Some Swedish scientists have worked on a synthetic blood, a blood that actually works better than every other attempt thus far, in that it doesn't cause any side effects such as nausea and the like. It's a chemical known as hemospan. It's actually a powder. It can be created from existing blood, but it can also be created, strangely enough, from any mammal. So you could have cow's blood put in for people in the ER, and which is far more readily available because people don't go to blood banks enough, donate blood enough. And
powdered blood.
Yeah, well, you know, you put water in it first before sticking a needle into someone.
So the general concept is it's kind of like the an artificial blood that when you need to put a lot of blood in somebody, you can use this.
Yes, especially when you don't have enough blood available. And it doesn't – you don't need to have it typed. You don't need to worry about blood typing issues with it, which is very big. However, for the time being, possibly for the foreseeable future as well, the group is only using human blood as a base for this powder, for making it.
So it's kind of silly. I mean, in as much as if you have the blood, why not just stock that blood?
Well,
rather than turn it into a powder.
Because having actual human blood, actually donating is one thing, but this is something that you're making. You don't have to worry about getting it from blood donors. You don't have to worry about typing it. You can use excess from another type, for example, make
right.
this powder and being able to use it forever.
And I'm assuming the powder stores a lot better than blood.
Yes, that's another big issue behind it, is that you don't have to – it doesn't have a short shelf life. You don't have to worry about refrigerating it. Those same issues.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Miles and Sean. The numbers to call in, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, and then send a message. We're taking your calls right now. Grab a phone. Give us a ring. We'll answer anything technically. We'll answer anything, even if it's not correct.
We'll give you an answer.
We'll give you an answer. For example, if you're curious about why you have to have your computer grounded, a grounded plug, and you know if you have one of those little gray dongles that you are able to plug into a non-grounded socket with your power strip that is grounded, is that cool? Is that okay? Well, I won't tell you unless someone calls and asks. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can go to The Geeks and send a message.
So
yes, Sean.
Another Microsoft story here.
They've
been flooding us with all kinds of news. Hey, you know, I'm not always pro-Microsoft here.
Okay.
I'm just not that big on Linux.
Just whenever it's on the air.
I like Linux. Love the idea of it. I just don't think it's a consumer consumer operating system.
Fair enough.
But anyway, Microsoft is renaming Media to Go, which nobody knows what that is anyway.
What's Media to Go?
Media number two, Go. Media to Go was... So you've heard of MP3 players, right?
I've heard of them.
Add video. That's Media to Go.
Okay.
So these cool little devices that you can actually play video on. Microsoft's been pushing this for a long time, trying to get developers and manufacturers to jump on board and start making these things. And we might start seeing them in the next year, probably. They've renamed it to, it's a great snappy name. It's Windows Mobile Software for Portable Media Centers.
Oh, yeah, that's nice and snappy. Can you do that one more time?
Windows Mobile Software for Portable Media Centers. And, of course, it'll be built on the Windows CE.NET operating system because they want to keep it small, fast. But it will support Media 9, Windows Media 9 audio and video formats, and MP3.
You know, when it's a kick for me to sit in this chair and know both of you so well, Sean and Miles. And to hear you say something like, of course they're building it on Windows CE because they want it small and simple and snappy, I'm expecting, my lips start to curl up because I'm expecting Miles to go, yeah, right. And I love that dynamic between the two of you. You know,
what's amazing is Windows CE sells for less than $10.
How can they do that? If they make Microsoft Windows, the full package, so expensive.
Well, CE is not Windows.
No.
Hey, want to know more amazing thing?
It is.
Linux is cheaper than that.
Linux is free. Yeah, I wasn't expecting that at all. You know, as much as I enjoy talking with you every week, let's get someone else on the line.
But, of course, there isn't billions of applications out there for Linux.
That's true. Only millions. Jerry from Seaside, welcome to GeekSpeak. Jerry? Jerry, are you with us?
Yes.
Ah, great. Go ahead and speak up if you would.
Yes, certainly. My question is kind of theoretical. I'm wondering, is it possible in principle for someone to break into or hack your home computer from a remote site? And if so or not, does it make any difference what type of connection you have, dial-up, DSL, whether you're networked, if you have a router, and so forth? So it's kind of a multi-part question.
Okay, well, the first part of that is, yes, it's possible for people to hack into personal computers. It happens all the time. The most common exploit is a Trojan horse virus, and it's basically this self-propagating normally email attachment. Sometimes it's something else that just scans your computer, and when it installs, it runs a service on your computer that then goes and contacts another company or another server and gives them control of your machine. So it does things like it's you can kind of think of it like a robotic application that's running on your machine, and it goes and checks different locations or waits for someone to tell it some command to do, and you're not aware of the application at all. That's the most common exploit, and it doesn't. If you're checking email, basically you can get infected with one of these. It's not totally uncommon. It's actually relatively common.
Or if you were just to take your computer, get a and connect it up via a modem or a DSL modem, cable modem, dial up, doesn't matter, and you're not running a firewall software, or you're not using a hardware router with firewall built into it, you're open.
Right. So the next part of that is your connection type. I mean, one of the delivery methods is through email, and therefore it doesn't really matter your connection type because the client is the actual infectious application or the application that spreads the disease. But in a situation where you have a DSL modem that's on all the time and your computer's on a lot, you've got a serious problem where people can scan the network and find you, even when you're not doing any email checking. So that depends on a few different factors. One is that it depends on your operating system having some kind of vulnerability. Now, like Windows 98, for example, has a lot of vulnerabilities. It wasn't exactly a secure operating system. Windows XP is a little more secure from a design concept, but you still have to be upgraded all your patches and everything. So one way to get around all those problems is to say, well, I'm going to put a firewall, which basically means a interference device in between my home computer and the internet at large. And this is really important when you're dealing with a DSL situation because you're on so much and the speed is really high. When you're doing dial-up, to put a firewall in there, it's a little harder because it's not a piece of hardware. You normally have your modem installed in your computer. So in that situation, you can buy software firewalls, or you can actually get them for free that do that.
A good one is the personal firewall that Zone Labs. I've actually written an article on this for Easy Tech Guide in San Francisco. Maybe it's something we should put on our website.
Does a router function essentially as a firewall?
Kind of.
Yeah, technically, router is just routing network information. Uh-huh. But you can have something that is a firewall in addition to its router duties.
Do you have a router?
Yes, I do. I'm networked with my desktop and laptop. So
that's what a router does. It takes one connection and separates it up into multiple.
And to some degree, it's a little safer because your machines don't have what's called a public IP address, so people can't address you directly.
Right.
So you're relatively safe in a lot of regards. Would you agree on that, Miles?
You're safer.
Safer. Do you have some kind of way of managing your router through like a web page?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Sometimes they come with that kind of an administrative feature that allows you to connect to them through some web interface. Mm. And you might want to look at your documentation to see how you're supposed to manage your router, because sometimes the default settings are a lot more open and welcoming and warm and cuddly to hackers than the settings that you can change it to set to lock it down a little bit. But what Sean's suggesting is actually protecting your computers at the base with Zone Alarm. Sean, can you talk a little bit about
that? Yeah, Zone Alarm has, it's free. Mm-hmm. Firewall software, and it's fully functioning. They've got a lot of other features that they don't offer in the free version, but those are features you don't necessarily need. But the basic firewall software is there, and it's free. You just need to be careful, because if you set the settings too high for security, you can actually lock yourself out you know, of the Internet and of a lot of features. But you can disable it if you have problems.
And if you implement one of these things, make
follow
sure,
the directions.
Yeah, make sure to follow directions really well. Understand what you're doing a little bit before you do it. Also, if you're running Windows, make sure you update your machine all the time. You always get your operating system updated, and you can do that with windowsupdate.microsoft.com.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Jerry, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We got Tom from Santa Cruz. Tom, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, quite well, thank you.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for taking the call. I had a question about DSL availability and what you guys might know. I live up on Coast Road, about 5 miles north of Santa Cruz, just off of Highway 1. And I've been trying to get DSL and talking to SBC about it, and it's been really hard to get them to get it, even though I have a neighbor who has it, who is supposedly closer to their router or their switching station than I'm supposedly closer than they are, and I still can't get it from them. And I just wonder if you guys can shed any light on that, or if you know any alternatives.
We can tell you an interesting story about it. Chris Dunphy, one of the, pseudo-regular guests, he's always on the road, and his job takes him all over the world. But Chris Dunphy owned a home in Boulder Creek, and when he got there, he called his, providers that are in the area that serving DSL and asked for DSL, and they said, no, you're too far out. Our tests show that you can't get the service.
Right.
He finally went, you know what? Give me the service. I'll pay for the installation. You come and install it in my home. I'll take the risk. And it paid off. He got good DSL. Now, at a lower bandwidth than normal DSL is, but he was able to get it because he forced the issue.
Huh.
And I don't know what client he finally went with, but what I would recommend is calling a more local ISP that knows the issues, and hopefully they will not tell you no, especially if you've got a neighbor. That's a good sign.
Chris got SBC. He found some intermediary that would actually install it for him. So SBC didn't do the installation.
I see. And yeah, because I was going through my ISP, and they weren't really able to help.
Who's your ISP?
Cruise.io.
Uh-huh.
They basically said, well, we're at the mercy of SBC.
Yeah.
And SBC won't do it, but if somebody else comes in and hooks it up and it works...
Uh-huh.
SBC is more than happy to charge you.
Here's the trick.
So basically, you have to pay somebody else who knows what they're doing to come out and do the physical connection.
Exactly.
Because SBC doesn't want to take the risk.
Right.
And if you shoot us an email at geeks@geekspeak.org, we'll dig up that person for you.
The other way to do this, and this is for anybody, if you see an SBC truck or van, right, and they're hooking up some kind of phone system, talk to that person. Go and just stop and go, hey, you want a brownie? And can you help me out? Make a friend with them, because it's really up to them whether they're going to be able to do the installation or not. And it's normally these guys that drive around the van, they're actually hooking up the house and make sure it works. And they're, they're techie geek people, and they're
right,
just doing their job.
They know how to solve problems.
Yeah, and if you say, my neighbor up the road away from the station has it, can you help me? They might be able to help you.
Yeah, it's funny because the neighbor who gets it is a lot further on the other side of Highway 1 than I am, and I'm closer to the highway. And over the phone with SBC a bunch of times, I went back and forth with them. And first they would always tell me, well, the system says you just can't get it. Sorry, goodbye. And then I'd go, wait a minute, and they'd say, oh, well, actually, yeah, you're closer than your neighbor. Huh, I wonder what the problem is. And they'd go through all these different explanations, but it always came out with, one way or another, sorry, we can't do it. So
Do you know which way the phone lines run between the two houses? I mean, are you both serviced off the same phone system?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know about that.
There's a whole question of whether the phones are actually closer to the highway or closer, inland or at, coast. It could be that you're farther away than your neighbor.
Right.
From a phone perspective.
Uh-huh. But SBC did say that you are closer to...
the substation?
The substation, yeah, the switching station or whatever they call
it. Then it sounds like you're in one of these situations where you have to pay a technician to install it, and then you're set.
Right,
SBC
okay.
won't do it as one of their... they normally sell a package for a year, and in that package is the setup cost. And they're going, we're not going to be able to keep this customer. There's an 80% chance that we won't, so screw it. We're not going to do it.
And then it was really fun when, after all that, the next day somebody else called me up and said, hey, you want to buy our modem connection with a cell phone? Oh, right. And I was like, well, if you guys can help me out with DSL, I might consider, you know. It was,
you know,
kind of,
here's one other thing. Do you have a line of sight with your neighbor?
No, actually, I don't.
Okay.
A little further.
And how far away? Are they less than a mile with you?
They're less than a mile. I'd say they're about half a mile.
Yeah, it's a little too far for 802.11,
to do it directly, like, from their house to mine?
Yeah, just, you know, both of you guys buy wireless setups, and
right.
You split the cost of DSL with them, and, I mean, it's not exactly legal as per your contract with SBC.
I think they're a little too far for that.
What's that?
I imagine they're a little too far for
that. Yeah, I'd imagine it sounds like it, half a mile too far. Well,
but,
thank you, Tom.
Thank you very much. I'm gonna send you an email about finding that person, and thanks for giving me a little hope, because I really want it.
Yeah, I'm jealous. Take care, Tom.
Thanks.
Yeah, I don't have DSL at my home, and I can't get it because I'm so far away from the substation.
Because you're wicked.
That's right. Thank you very much. Steve from Santa Cruz, welcome to Wicked Geek Speak.
Yeah, my question is, how can you guys just be so psychic today?
I don't know.
Actually, I really just wanted to call and thank you. It just so happens that I'm waiting for a delivery of OS X Panther and two LaCie Firewire drives. Match up with the other two LaCie Firewire drives that I already have connected to my system.
That would have been
really
bad.
That I used for backup. So that could have been very disastrous.
And I'm so glad we saved you.
And I just I want to thank you for saving me today.
Of course. Actually, they actually gave us serial numbers for those drives.
Oh.
So you can know if you're actually
model
affected.
Numbers or serial numbers?
Serial
the first
numbers.
Half of the serial numbers.
So the affected products have serial numbers.
Are you writing this down, Steve?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay.
That are less than 1339, followed by five X's.
So
or
it's lower
by five numbers.
Okay. Yes. So there are two serial numbers, and if your serial number is less than these, you're affected. So
ooh.
It's 1339 or 0339.
So even if it's
those
it's
are the first four numbers.
1339.
Yeah.
Like mine starts with 1, 2,
isn't
5, 1.
Isn't 0339 less than 1339?
Well, 0250 would be less than 0339.
Yeah, so
okay.
Certainly the drives I've been using would be affected.
Well, good. Well, I'm glad that it won't be affected because you'll unplug it before you plug them in, right?
Oh, definitely.
And
thank
in fact, you might want to just, if you're getting the other FireWires, you might want to make a second copy of all that data on your new FireWire drives. Unplug all of them, install Panther, and then, you know, in case it really messes you up, it won't.
Mm-hmm. Good idea.
Steve, good luck.
Bye.
That's great. We actually saved one person. Now, of course, there's 15 other people in the listening area that unfortunately weren't listening this morning, and their FireWires are going to get destroyed by Apple.
They make good drives, so.
GeekSpeak, saving lives.
Or at least data. Cindy, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. I have a question. I did a search on a couple of different search engines about a week ago, and I put in Halloween costume, and did the search in the evening, turned down the computer, brought it back up the next morning to check emails, and not in my emails, but in my favorites, I had five different offensive websites on my favorites.
Who else uses your computer?
I swear, I went there first. And nobody, I'm not kidding, nobody went into that computer and did anything.
Are you using Internet Explorer?
Yeah. I'm using Internet Explorer.
What kind of searching are you using that you could do a search and then leave the computer on?
Say that again?
You did a search and then you left the computer on, meaning the search was still running?
No.
Oh, okay.
I did a search for Halloween costume on Google and Excite and got a few sites and looked around and then turned the computer off for the night and then came back the next morning.
And your favorites.
I turned on and checked my emails and stuff, and there was, like, all this stuff on there in my favorites.
Okay, I'm lost. Miles, Sean?
Well, you know, when you – some pop-ups will ask you if you would like to add them to your favorites or make them your new, you know,
the
your
question
new
is
main
how,
page.
How tired were you last night is the question Sean's asking. So basically, yeah, if you just click yes, you know, kind of get the dialogue away, you might have added it.
Oh, no.
No,
I'm a little more savvy than that.
Yeah.
And I you know, I have small kids at home, so I'm real careful about stuff that goes in and out. And that's what really wigged me on this.
Is there a code that you can actually add favorites to somebody?
I don't know of a
Let's
app
just
like
make
that.
Sure. When you were checking your email, you didn't click on any attachments, did you?
Oh, no. I did not click on any attachments. You know, I just wondered if there was something maybe in these series of Halloween sites that are probably getting hit a lot this time of year.
You know, the thing is, okay, first off, yes, it makes sense. You know, you did something different. You searched the internet for Halloween costumes, and maybe you went to a site. But the question we're having is, how could someone, without the user's input, override those controls and add favorites without your support, without a user's support? So the question, the first thing we do is, this is just a thought process on this. Well, maybe someone else is doing it, and they said okay. So some other user, but you're pretty sure that didn't happen. So the next thing is, well, it's possible that there's some kind of, you know, it was a mistake that you said yes to something that you didn't mean to, but that happened multiple times. That doesn't make any sense at all. So, and you don't think you did that. So then we go to, well, IE has bugs. There are bugs in IE that people can exploit through ActiveX scripts on pages. So it's possible that happened, but that's really unlikely. And the last choice, which I like the best, is that you have something on your computer now that did it. Some application that's running all the time, one of these Trojan horses, and there's advertising Trojan horses that run.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have required you downloading something intentionally and installing it, which people do all the time for a myriad of reasons, or an email virus, which we would probably know about because it would probably spread pretty well.
See, I'm actually leaning toward the human factor. I'm actually leaning toward somebody is playing a practical joke on you from your computer and not owning up to it.
Well, here's the other thing I was wondering, because I've been really good about not opening attachments, but I do get jokes and stuff that are forwarded that have this long litany of other, you know, AOL email people, a lot of people I don't know. Is there any connection there if I just open it?
As long as it doesn't have an attachment, no, there's no danger
to
you. If you want to stay with it just a minute, Cindy, we'll continue this conversation.
Okay.
If you have questions or comments, the numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-587. You can also go to geekspeak.org, click on the Geeks, and then send us a message. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronics parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You are listening to Geekspeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks Sean and Miles. You can call in now, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We have Cindy on the line from Santa Cruz. We'll get back to her in just a moment. No one else is waiting, so now it's your opportunity to call us or send us a message through the electronic age of the Internet, geekspeak.org. Click on the Geeks, send us a message. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet services, including DSL and spam filters, for home and office throughout Santa Cruz County. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. All right, Miles, you really think that Cindy's having some other user, some malicious user in her home doing this?
Well, I guess my experience is colored somewhat by virtue of the fact that I have an arachnophobic housemate and just the other night got some fake spiders and put it into his bed for him to find.
So because you're evil, you're assuming that Cindy's home is evil as well.
It's that time of the year.
See, Geek Speaks wicked, not other people. Cindy, how old are your kids?
7 and 9.
Hmm.
Pretty small.
Hey, you've got a Windows operating system in front of you right now, right? Can you go take a look at favorites inside your My Documents, you know, settings, blah, 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 user. Look at favorites and see if they have a date stamp on when the favorite is created, like a file date. It's possible, Cindy, that you can find out when those favorites were actually created, assuming you can trust the operating system, which is probably pretty valid. There's no reason to lie to that. And that might be that they were created before this.
Oh.
So that's a good way to go. And what I'm going to suggest, do you have Windows 98 or Windows XP or what version of Windows?
Windows XP.
You have Windows XP?
Yeah, if you right-click on a favorite and select Properties.
But they have to do it from the Explorer. So what you do, how do you get to it?
No, you can do it from IE.
From IE, yeah.
Okay.
So go to Favorites and IE, right-click on whichever one favorite that you think was added.
Cindy, just
select Properties.
Well, actually, I've dumped them, you know.
Did you erase your trash?
Did I erase my trash?
Your recycling bin, did you erase it?
Did your favorite show up in the recycle bin?
I don't
think so.
Let's do this. So go ahead and go to my computer on the desktop, open that up, and then find recycling bin and open that up and see if there's anything in that has the same URL.
Oh, okay.
So they do get sent to the recycling bin.
They do get sent to the recycling bin. So
unless you say, you know.
Yeah. So basically, most likely in your recycling bin, you're going to find these favorites still there, and your kids are still using them. No, I'm just kidding. And you can take a look at the date, you know, when the creation date is, or when the date is of the shortcut, and or the favorite bookmark, whatever you want to call it, and find out when it was created. At least it will kind of track down when the incident happened.
Right. So there's no necessarily any software that would. My theory is that it didn't happen inside my home. So let's just bear with me.
Sure.
If it did not. There's no software that can support or help this kind of thing not to happen.
Yeah, it's called an operating system in a good browser. I mean,
well, there's no smoking gun. There's no quick thing.
So we have an email. This is an email from Joel. I'm not sure where he's from, but he says there were several exploits in the favorites adding to the Internet Explorer that just by viewing a certain JavaScript, these exploits add whatever it wants to the favorites.
So there you go.
And so it's a malicious website you visited.
See, okay, so it was the second option.
So the solution is to update to IE 6.0.
Or a different browser.
Okay.
And you can update to IE 6.0. In fact, if you go to windowsupdate.microsoft.com, which you should be doing anyway as a Windows user, and download all their patches and everything, you will automatically get updated to 6.
And you can only do that with IE.
Yeah, that or download one of the Mozilla browsers, Mozilla Firebird.
And not use IE anymore. And when you install a new browser, it will import your favorites.
I see.
So those are your two options.
I've got to say, I was a big IE user until I picked up Mozilla 1.5. Well, I picked up 1.3. I've been using it since then, and I love it.
You love Mozilla?
I love it.
Big thing with Mozilla, we talk about this all the time at Geekspeak because all of us love the browser, is the tab browsing. And you can open multiple websites. Great for searching. You know, you go to Google, you get all your search lists, and you hold down your control button and click on the links, and it opens new tabs for each one.
Or you right-click and say open it in a new tab.
Yeah.
So you don't have a bunch of windows all over your desktop.
Nice. Thanks
to Joel for that
Joel, thank you for the exploit notification about Internet Explorer and adding favorites. Cindy, thank you very much for being on GeekSpeak.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
We have another question from Joel, if you want to do that, or do we have a call?
Go ahead. We'll do that.
Kind of interesting. I'd like to see what Miles thinks of this. But he says that Vietnam is being pressured by the WTO to get rid of all their pirate software. So they sell pirate copies of Microsoft products at retail stores. So they've been forced, due to budget constraints, to move to Linux. And
to open source software, yeah.
It's become a mandate in Vietnam. So he wants to know, how will the fact that an entire government of a large Asian country moving to Linux and OpenOffice will affect the implementation of Office 2003?
You want to talk a large East Asian country, China's doing the same thing.
And specifically, you know, he wants to know the movement towards closed application standards, which is DRM. He wants to know how that will affect open source users, Sun customers, so on.
Ooh, isn't that a complicated series of questions?
Miles answered that yes or no.
No. With regard to Vietnam and open source software, that is what the tack that they're taking, is that they don't want to have to worry about licensing and all of that. They're just going to say, all right, screw all of that. We're just going to go in open source software and never have the danger come up.
Mm-hmm.
At least with regards to government procurements, their public sector is still going to be able to use whatever they want to use.
Same thing in China.
Right. With regard to open source and digital rights management implementations, that's an open issue. It's a question of whether or not DRM gets implemented in hardware. If it does get implemented in hardware, then you're going to see a lot of problems with getting Linux, BSD, and similar operating systems on top.
What is it, real quick, DRM?
Just stands for digital rights management. It's not a specific technology.
So you couldn't download a song and play it on any machine you wanted to.
It would be right.
Only
it's
on the machine
hardware
that you purchased it on.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not talking about a particular implementation. It's talking about the way to restrict
so
access.
So the general concept being that applications or systems are unique, people are unique, theoretically, is what they really want.
I'd be surprised to see hardware.
There's been talk about it. There's been talk
on a computer, enforcement in hardware on a computer, I mean, it'd be very difficult to do. But they have been trying to get this hardware into HDTVs.
Right, but see, all they have to do is get
consumer devices.
All they have to do is get Dell and Gateway and Apple to release these kind of things, and then you pretty much have the market on computers.
I suppose you would, yeah.
Well,
so it's,
yeah.
Or you could get a processor. Anyway. You get Intel to be providing it, you know, enforcement. If you want to get our specs on building chipsets, you have to have to. It's possible to do it in hardware. It's a scary thing. I mean,
it is, but we'll know about it beforhand, certainly. And
there probably is going to be a situation where you can make open source stuff run on the hardware anyway without any kind of restriction.
Yeah, with regards to Office documents, one of the things is whether or not you can make changes to a document or whether you can just view it, things like that. with regards to open source, they've had a really good deal with, or they've had a good history with emulating older formats, being or other formats, Microsoft formats, to be able to read in and emulate the functionality. However, with DRM, by making that restriction, they are caught by the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which says you cannot reverse engineer and cannot circumvent a security mechanism. So what it can do is simply lock them out of interoperability.
So it basically makes Office own all the Office documents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've got to say, I wouldn't be surprised if the number of Windows machines actually gets reduced. I mean, it's going to take a long time for the next version to come out. They're having a lot of problems with their current version.
Let's talk about
the trend for Mac OS. I mean, it's really on the rise.
Yeah, let's talk about Windows in just a minute after we take Ian's call. Ian from Davenport, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, thanks, guys. Great show.
Is this Ian?
Yeah.
Oh, Ian.
Ian, no, you got it.
Oh, Ian?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Wow,
Ian.
Wow, you got it right.
Well, you know, our producer, our wonderful producer, gives me phonetic spellings through our... So it's I-A-N.
She can't spell either.
It's a perfect match.
It's our wonderful producer and my lovely wife,
Maggie Cleveland.
The easiest way to do it.
So, Ian, what is your question from Davenport?
I wanted to follow up on the guy that just talked to you down on Coast Road. We are a little farther removed. We don't have... we're off the grid and no telephone. And one of my neighbors recently is put in a satellite system that he's pretty happy with.
For wireless access? I mean, for internet access?
Internet access, uh-huh. Yep. And but it's pretty pricey. And we're looking at trying to look into, doing some kind of wireless system here. And I just wanted to find out what the limitations of something like that would be.
So you want to do wireless to your neighbor to mooch some of his bandwidth?
Limitations would be latency. Looking up websites or with satellite.
Well, that's satellite. The satellite thing is actually an issue. You won't be able to game, you know, Twitch games online with that satellite connection. But other than that, it's... This delay is not going to be really effective to you. Basically, there's a delay in satellite because you have to advance the signal off of a satellite back to terrestrial, and that time that takes the light to travel or the radio frequency to travel is actually measurable in milliseconds, and therefore, well, less than milliseconds. Therefore, it interferes with your communication speeds, but not noticeably. So the question is, how close is your neighbor to you?
One's about a quarter mile and one's about 100 yards.
Okay. The 100 yards one, or 100 meter one, since we're on GeekSpeak, you should be able to do with 802.11 cards, wireless cards. And there are these basically cards that are a little higher end than the most traditional cards, and you can connect. But there's also if you have line of sight with any of them, there's 802.11 antennas that are directional antennas, and they go 6 miles. So,
which I would recommend, because 100 meters is pretty long. You're going to be having some major speed problems.
So can you see either of your neighbors or both of them?
I can see the one that's farther away.
Then the one that's farther away, you probably can make a line of sight connection if it's within 6 miles.
Uh-huh.
And basically, you're looking at an 802.11 directional antenna. I don't know much about the what manufacturers to look for.
That's
go ahead and do a Google search. And you can connect
up. A few hundred dollars per.
But basically, there's going to be a router in both, or there's going to be a piece of hardware in both houses. It's not going to blanket your home in 802.11. It's just a connection thing. So you're not going to have wireless at your homes. You're just going to have, it's just a replacement of a wire between the two homes.
Yeah.
Right.
And I wish I didn't live in a mountainous region. I could see a neighbor because I'd do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan. Thanks, guys.
Ian, thank you very much for the call.
Bye.
And we have, Charlie. Charlie, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, that is if my phone works today.
It seems to be working now.
Is it? Okay. Yeah, I just got a thing called IDSL installed. It was just activated this morning by a company called Megapath. So I'm basically talking about the same issue.
Okay.
Of, trying to get connectivity. And
Watsonville, right?
Yeah. Yep. And so, well, I'm actually in northern Monterey County.
Oh, okay.
And so south of Watsonville, per se. And so I tried the same thing, you know, just trying to talk him into SBC, that is, trying to talk him into just giving it to me, you know. It's like, you know, I don't care. I mean, I'll take the bandwidth that it supplies, and they are awfully darn stubborn about it. And it seems actually that I thought SBC wasn't going to have anything to do with this new one, but it turns out that they did after all. And so they are still installing the kind of the phone connection, and then this other company comes along and puts their stuff on top of it. And I think the same thing was true when I investigated Monterey Bay, the M Bay, you know, and
sure.
So they're also supplying, you know, separate from SBC DSL, and it's always pricier. So
what's the name of this company, Charlie?
It's called Megapath, M E G A P PATH, and they are actually national. So they're
and they megapath.com?
Yeah.
Okay. And so basically you had to go to them, even though they're going to have they basically are having SBC do all the installation of that.
I think effectively, yeah, they still have at the phone, you know, wire into your house, it's still SBC. Actually, it looks like it's megapath.net.
Okay, megapath.net. Well, Charlie, thank you very much for letting us know that that's how you do it if you're on the fringe.
So I ended up getting ISDN even though I had it. But the small advantage was that it boosted me to 144 instead of 128, and it's slightly cheaper because it's a $99 flat rate, and I can dump my ISP and the $92 ISDN phone. So it's just slightly cheaper if you're forced to use ISDN in outlying areas.
So you're no longer using ISDN?
Well, I'm effectively using ISDN. It's DSL, or it's a DSL wrapper around ISDN.
Right. Okay.
It really is. So.
Well, thank you very much, Charlie.
Okay.
We've got another emails asking for that, too.
Okay. So, again, it's megapath.net is one of the companies that will kind of help you out on long-distance DSL.
So we have an email question from Jeanette. She asked, concerning Zone Alarm, which is that free personal firewall software from Zone Labs that we were talking about.
Right.
She has it, and she says she has to turn off Zone Alarm, which is the free version, to FTP to her website and check for virus software updates.
Sure, sure.
And she wants to know, is there any way that she can change it so that it'll work?
We can answer that. Sean, Miles, what's the FTP port?
I used to know.
Okay, so basically what you need to do is go into your FTP client.
2021, I think.
Okay. You need to go into your FTP client and make sure that passive mode is enabled, PASV mode. And basically what that tells the client to do is to use the same port for communications in both directions.
Okay, so if your FTP
communications
client,
and data, are they using the same?
And is that a solution, something that is recommended by Zone Alarm?
This is recommended by Zone Alarm.
Okay. So basically Zone Alarm says, yeah, the port for FTP we're going to allow to be open. But what happens when the FTP client talks to the server is they communicate first on that port that is the default FTP port, because that's what the server is listening to. And then they communicate with the back return information goes on a different port. And I'm not sure why TCP does that exactly.
No, it's not TCP. FTP specifically, it has, or at least originally, historic FTP has had two distinct channels, the communication channel and the data channel. Communication channel, the one that you're saying, give me directory listings,
okay,
do directory manipulation and navigation, were on the original port, and then it would open up a second communication line for your data transfer.
Oh, okay.
So what they're saying, passive FTP, what that does is it goes, okay, because the data transfer would always be, the client-server relationship would swap.
Right.
And that's why it wouldn't work. So the passive mode keeps the server as the server.
So what was the emailer's name or the sender's name?
Her name was Jeanette.
And Jeanette used geekspeak.org, clicked on the geeks, and then
sent us a message.
So Jeanette, there you go.
Now, if that doesn't work, they suggest using the medium internet security setting instead of high.
So it has multiple setting choices.
Yeah, there's low, medium, high.
Great. We have one more call, and that's probably all we're going to be able to take. Eli from Santa Cruz, welcome to Geekspeak.
Yes, I'm trying to recover from an XP upgrade.
An XP upgrade,
from Windows 98 SE, and if there's any general guidance, I installed everything beforehand because I didn't have everything to reinstall, and I took too many chances. And there was a copy of PC Anywhere installed on the 98 SE, and it left something around. I cannot uninstall because I don't have the CD, and it's blocking only about the initial screen.
So basically, now that you've installed XP, it's trying to start up Windows, trying to start up PC Anywhere, and it's failing on you.
Right, but it's also blocking some of the functionality of the initial screen of Windows XP. I'm willing to uninstall and just lose PC Anywhere because I understand it's not XP compatible, the version that I have anyway.
So if you go to your Start menu,
can you get to your Start menu?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you go to Run.
Yeah.
There's a line there where you can actually type in application names to run. You want to type in ipconfig. So ipconfig. And what that does is shows you, that's going to be msconfig. Sorry.
Okay.
What msconfig does is it shows you all the applications that are loading, that Windows loads and runs in the background. And what I'm thinking is part of that PC Anywhere, something is running in the background that is you're running into problems. So even though the code is, the application's installed on your computer, doesn't necessarily mean it's running.
Well,
but I think a piece of it is.
In fact, there's a big thing where that application does not, PC Anywhere, earlier versions of Windows does not run on XP, and it causes this problem. I had the same kind of problem.
So I would suggest go to the startup tab in msconfig which is the very last tab, and you can see all the applications that are loading with Windows and running in the background,
mm-hmm.
and see if it's being run there. And if it is...
Delete it.
Well, yeah. Well, you can disable it.
Yeah.
And that should help you.
And what's the command again, Sean?
msconfig.
msconfig, okay.
Under the run command.
And this is going to catch the initialization if you see anywhere it's doing.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for the call.
Any general advice about a website for recovery for people who are too brave going to XP?
Well, you might want to try and do some searches online to see what other people recommend. That's about the best advice I can give you.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you very much for the call. We, of course, are out of time again on Geek Speak today. But that doesn't mean that we're not going to be back next week, which we will. We'll be back next week, as we are every week, here on KUSP. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital jukeboxes, and and video recorders. Excuse me. Information is at Seagate.com. The Geeks this morning were Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. Thank you, Geeks, producer, for being on GeekSpeak today.
Thank you, Lyle.
Good to be here, Lyle.
Yep. Happy Halloween, everybody.
Thanks for those that called in, making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out, and who wants to listen to that? This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto, or on the web at kusp.org. For GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Stay tuned now for Fine Print.